Welcome to the New Mexico News Podcast, headlines and stories from the land of enchantment. Brought to you by KRQE. Here's Chris McKee and Gabrielle Burkhart.
When news broke in January that federal agents were raiding the homes of several Albuquerque police officers and a well-known defense attorney, while everyone was initially tight-lipped about virtually everything related to this investigation, one of the first people that we heard from on camera about this was DA Sam Bregman, who shared that his office was being forced to drop more than 150 pending criminal cases, mostly DWIs, related to officers who were under federal investigation.
That number of dismissed cases has now climbed to more than 200. As a reminder, the broader federal investigation here is tied to allegations that certain APD officers were being paid to get DWI cases dismissed. Now, there's a lot of layers that are still unfolding in this story and in this investigation, which it seems like we're constantly reporting on lately in our newscasts and online. We've also done a much broader episode on this podcast about the scandal if you want to go back and listen to your feed for that context. But today, let's get right to our guest. We're joined in studio by the Bernalillo County District Attorney himself, Sam Bregman, to discuss some of the layers and the complexities of this federal and internal investigation going on with APD officers. Sam Bregman, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
So the day that this news broke in January, I remember our reporter, Marilyn Upchurch, interviewed you at the Roundhouse in Santa Fe. It was in the middle of the legislative session. And at the time, you called it a gut punch to be forced to drop all of those cases. But your office making that decision has something to do with officers whose credibility is called into question, right, in a Giglio list. Can you start just broadly by explaining what is a Giglio list and the basics of why you had to drop these cases?
Certainly. The Giglio list, and by the way, Giglio comes from a previous court case, a federal court case. But we in New Mexico, as well as the rest of the country, have to follow certain guidelines as prosecutors. And when someone is put on a Giglio list, it is most often because there's a huge credibility problem with that witness, whether it be they did something wrong or guilty themselves of something, or whether or not they just have credibility issues that we have to alert defense to when we know that. And that's why we put them on a Giglio list, so that if defense counsel representing a client wants to know whether or not the person that's going to come testify them against them, a law enforcement officer, has any issues that would call into question their credibility or their trustworthiness, then we publish that list. Defense attorneys know it. And that was what happened in this case. So just to be clear, I didn't make an announcement necessarily back when this first broke, but at the same time, we were nolly prossing cases, which is dismissing cases. And I called it a gut punch to my stomach then. I still feel that way. Another way of saying it, I was just sick to my stomach. But I had no choice as the district attorney. When we have a situation where we have, in this instance, DWI officers who the U.S. Attorney's Office has informed us of severe Giglio issues. In other words, their trustworthiness, their credibility is greatly strained in every way. I have no choice as a prosecutor but to not go forward with a case that relies almost entirely on those officers' testimony. Because I will never, ever impugn the integrity of our criminal justice system by convicting someone, regardless of what they've done, based almost entirely or solely on the testimony of a dirty cop. I won't do it.
A Giglio list being on that, is it essentially an automatic, this person, any relation they have to that case, they're just out? Like we basically can't move forward with the case at all.
No, it's not necessarily that if they've had there are cases, and we've reviewed slowly and surely and thoroughly 1,000 DWI cases in our office to determine if we could go forward. Because if the officer did not play a central role, in other words, if an officer was just a witness to one aspect of it, filled out a tow sheet, for example, perhaps, but did not participate in the DWI investigation itself and we believe we have a good faith basis that we can prove a case beyond reasonable doubt, then we'll go forward as we are on certain cases that specifically these officers did touch, did handle in one way or another. But their testimony was not critical to us proving beyond a reasonable doubt. And so there are cases we're moving forward that had some involvement, but there are also cases that we could not in good faith prove without their sworn testimony. And the practical matter is, you know, it doesn't do any good to leave them around when they're just going to take the fifth anyways, if perhaps I would speculate in that sense, but if they take the fifth, or I just am not going to base a conviction on someone whose credibility and trustworthiness has been told to our office and to me by the U.S. Attorney's Office that they have no credibility anymore. I can't do it. And it makes me sick to my stomach. Listen, there is no choice sometimes, but in prosecutorial ethics, and I won't ever compromise them. But yeah, it's terrible. But here's what I want to make sure we emphasize. We reviewed all these cases. And I want the folks that live in Bernalillo County to understand this. That despite dismissing these 200, our office and law enforcement in general has done a phenomenal job when it comes to DWIs. In 2023 and 2024, those 15 months so far, we've convicted over 1,300 DWIs with an 80% conviction rate. In fact, that's the highest conviction rate we've ever had, even with those 200 cases included in those numbers.
Cases are dismissed or dropped in court for a lot of different reasons, which can include, you know, witness cooperation. Maybe it's a change in the evidence that can be heard in the case. Officers also not showing up to court can be a component of that, which I think we'll get into a little bit more later. But having to drop now at this point more than 200 pending cases, again, mostly DWIs, not all, but mostly drunk driving charges against defendants dropped for this reason. Was this something that you ever expected that you'd have to face as a DA? And maybe can you describe the nature of just how unusual it is to drop this many cases?
I think it's very unusual. Obviously, there's reasons why it's transpired. The Albuquerque Police Department has a specialized unit, if you will, that does DWIs. I mean, the DWI officers are called out, so it's oftentimes the same officers that show up to investigate a DWI. That's what we're dealing with here when we're talking about the specific officers that are on the Giglio list. They are DWI officers, so many of them obviously involve DWIs. The unique thing about a DWI case is that so much of the case is based on the testimony of the police officer recounting what he saw, what he did that day. For example, the specifics of how a defendant performed in field sobriety tests. For example, the specifics to detail why that officer had reasonable suspicion to pull that car over to begin with. Why he had reasonable suspicion to get the individual out of the car to do a DWI investigation. All those things have to be articulated to a court, to the judge, and perhaps in some instances to juries, on why this happened. This is what I saw. When someone says, I smelled an odor of alcohol, for example, and they have huge credibility issues, the person that's saying that, where's that getting us, right? I mean, it's a real problem because so much of the evidence that a finder of fact, a judge or a jury, is going to base their decision of someone's innocence or not guilty or guilty on is what comes out of the mouth of the DWI officer. And so that's why these two things came together. Some officers on a Giglio list who happened to be in the DWI unit and the DWI kind of case requiring so much officer testimony in order to give the ability of the finder of fact to find guilty or not guilty. So those things came together, but you ask me, is this something I ever thought? Of course not. And it's something that I would never want to do. But at the same time, I had no choice. I have no choice in this because the most important thing to me is the credibility and the integrity of our criminal justice system. And we cannot have credibility and integrity in our criminal justice system if we have cops who are on Giglio lists because of their trustworthiness or credibility testifying to convict people of various crimes. It's just not acceptable. So I had no choice. We took the steps we need to take. Regardless of that, though, I want the community to know that our office, together with law enforcement, is still very much focused on DWI. It's a horrific crime because it affects so many. There are victims, and we don't have to even go through the history of our state with DWI. It's been a problem in the past. It continues to be an issue. We are continuing to prosecute. We have 14 prosecutors in our office dedicated to prosecuting DWIs. So we're very much focused, and we understand this. This sounds terrible to the community, and it is terrible, but it's something we had to do as prosecutors.
Early on, we learned this federal investigation surrounds accusations that certain officers were getting paid to get DWI cases dismissed. We also did try to reach out to the attorney implicated in this investigation, Thomas Clear III. He's been a defense attorney in Albuquerque for a long time, handling hundreds of DWI cases. Before becoming DA, you were also a private attorney in Bernalillo County, and we know you've held public office and, you know, in city council in years past. Did you know Tom Clear, and were you at all surprised by these allegations and to learn that the feds were investigating him?
I have known Tom Clear for many years. I've been practicing law, I want to say, for about 30 years or so in this community, and certainly Tom Clear has been around for some time as well. I don't really want to comment more on that, on Mr. Clear. I want to make sure Mr. Clear and the police officers that are involved or accused, at least through various mediums of perhaps, and they're on a Giglio list for a reason, but accused of wrongdoing, are all innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. And I respect that kind of important message that needs to be sent. But at the same time, the idea of paying a police officer not to show up for court, regardless of what lawyer it is mind-blowing to me. It's unacceptable. It goes contrary to everything lawyers are meant to be in our community. So it's unacceptable at the level, if it is in fact true that that was taking place. It's sickening.
Albuquerque police, we know, have also launched an internal investigation into 7 of its officers amid this federal investigation. 6 were placed on leave, and now 5 of those officers have resigned, choosing to turn in their badge instead of being interviewed by an internal affairs investigator. So, Gabby, we know that you recently published an investigation about that thread of the story. But to be clear here, no one has faced any criminal charges yet at this point. Meanwhile, our KRQE investigative team has been looking into some of the data and found that Thomas Clear III had a pretty high dismissal rate in DWI cases in Bernalillo County. For some context, our investigative reporter Ann Perrette found that from 2018 through 2023, Attorney Clear's average dismissal rate was 63.3%. That's more than double the typical dismissal rate in Bernalillo County. Now, Sam, given your experience and expertise as a defense attorney and now the DA, does that dismissal rate raise any red flags in your view?
I don't know that by itself. I think you can't, that by itself may or may not raise red flags, but I don't think that you can ever say that someone's doing something criminal in nature or anything like that based purely on whether or not they're having success or not success when it comes to defending their clients in a courtroom. I think that's probably not where we should be headed when we look at these things, but rather, I think it's extremely important that we recognize that the feds are doing this investigation. They need the time to do a thorough and complete investigation. I want them to do that because I want the truth to come out about all of this, all of these issues that may be swirling around the DWI unit, the APD, with private counsel, with whatever that has to do. I think the community deserves to know. And in order to do that, unfortunately, we all want answers yesterday, right? But we're going to have to let the investigators do their work, do it completely and thoroughly to their satisfaction. And then we'll see what that all reflects. And we have deferred at the DA's office on this matter to the feds and let them complete their investigation. We have been cooperative in every way possible we can with the U.S. Attorney's Office. And we will continue to be. And eventually we're going to get to the bottom of this. It is a dark stain, if you will, on all of police. It doesn't do us any good overall to have the community ever question the trustworthiness of the people who are sworn to protect and serve. And so, yeah, we need to get to the bottom of it. I'm confident the feds will at some point, and we'll go from there.
In a letter to your office dated January 25th, the U.S. attorney said, quote, "I want to thank you for your continued cooperation with the pending federal investigation into alleged wrongdoing by certain APD officers and others." The letter went on to explain that the U.S. attorney had identified four affected officers to your office. Those were the ones initially placed on the Giglio list in January. Those four officers have now since resigned from APD. They are Harvey Johnson, Honorio Alba, Joshua Montano, and Nelson Ortiz. So we haven't heard directly from those officers, but we did obtain a copy of Joshua Montano's resignation letter, which states, quote, "In order for me to talk to the city about what I knew, I needed to not be the city's scapegoat for its own failures." He went on to say, quote, "None of the allegations against myself or others in the DWI unit happened without supervisory knowledge." He also said, "The issues I let myself get caught up in within the DWI unit were generational." And then he went on to say in the last paragraph, "I take responsibility for my actions," but he didn't elaborate after that. So hearing that, Sam, is it surprising to hear him claim that these issues were generational, or what do you take away, if anything, from those statements?
Listen, I can't speculate to what was in his mind when he wrote that down. That's between him and his counsel, and I'm not going to speculate that. Although I can tell you I've practiced law for 30 years in this community, and I never heard of something like this going on. I know that defense counsel perhaps would always root in their own mind for a police officer not to show up for a pretrial interview or a case, and it would get dismissed. That's natural. That's human. But the idea of paying police officers, I never heard of that before in my 30 years of practicing law in this community.
You have a lot of experience in the courtroom, we know, and you have a lot of experience going in front of judges, arguing cases. When it comes to those four officers on that Giglio list and the cases that they handled with Thomas Clear III, we know his dismissal rate, according to the numbers crunched by our Karakui investigative team, we know that Clear's dismissal rate jumps to 91.5% with those four APD officers. So what does that number tell you, if anything? I know we asked you about another number.
That number tells me that there was a high dismissal rate when those police officers were involved in cases that Mr. Clear was defending someone. That's the extent of what I will opine on right now. That's what that tells me.
Okay. And I want to ask you about how cases get dismissed. Like we said, an officer who may be considered a main witness in a DWI case usually has to show up to court. So an outside attorney handling the case of one defendant whose case was among the dropped cases in January, he told me, you know, the part where you read between the lines here in this alleged scheme is that the officer may be getting some sort of benefit from the attorney who's charging their client above market rate for a defense. And the officer just doesn't show up to court, case dismissed. So there were a lot of questions about how officers' attendance in court is tracked. Can you give us some insight here? Is it the DA's responsibility to notify APD when an officer fails to appear in court? Why not?
So there's no statute, there's no regulation, there's no requirement upon the district attorney's office that we notify someone, APD or any other law enforcement agency, of non-attendance. It is ultimately the responsibility of the officer himself and his department, and obviously when I say his department, it would be his supervisors, to make sure that that officer shows up for court. Let's be clear on what the DA's office has been doing since I've been there. And that is, we actually have access to officers' calendars, their business calendars. We have people at our office who insert on their calendar electronically the court date they're supposed to be at. And that has been going on since since I've been there, at least. Prior to me getting there, there was a computer system that would do the following. Our prosecutors would fill out an FTA form. They download it online or whatever they do on the computer system. The computer would then send a notice. Apparently, several months before I got into office, that computer system stopped sending those notices. We didn't have any knowledge that it stopped sending those notices. Then APD didn't tell us that they weren't getting notices. So there was that computer system failure, if you will, took place. But at the end of the day, here's the ironic part about this. If you go back to 2018, there was over 400 failures to appear by police officers for pretrial interviews or actual trial dates or court dates that they were supposed to be at. Last year, since I've been, 35, only 35. So we saw the numbers in our office, or at least the feel and seeing the numbers, that things were getting much better, that there was a precipitous decline in how many times there were FTAs. We now know that may be a different story when it comes to a few of the officers. We don't have the same issue with BCSO as far as who got notice, who didn't. We don't have it with New Mexico State Police. And I can tell you we're not going to have it anymore with APD either, because in real time now, for every time an officer fails to appear, and sometimes, by the way, there are good reasons officers don't make it to court. They have an illness in the family they have to take care of. They have an emergency. They're driving to court and they see a crime being committed and they need to step in. There's lots of reasons police officers fail to appear that are absolutely valid. But now when an officer fails to appear, it is real-time communication between our office and APD. And we're making sure that I think all of APD knows when their officers don't make it to court. I think we're doing a really good job on that. And APD's worked with us to do that as well.
So as you mentioned, you know, there are legitimate reasons officers can miss court, you know, such as seeing a crime, being on another call, last minute conflicts. Obviously, there have been some changes here, but do you think that there's anything more that we should be doing, that agencies should be doing to make sure attendance is tracked? You know, should this be, as you had mentioned, there's no statute describing this, codifying this into law. Should there be some sort of statute that does this, or is this, we can all just do a better team effort?
No, I think this, the latter of what you just said. I think we can all do a better team effort together in communicating all of law enforcement. And I think it has changed since I've become DA. We are communicating better and we are talking with each other all the time. Certainly I talk with the sheriff. I talk with the chief quite frequently. I talk with their command staffs quite frequently. I know my office does as well. But listen, is nothing's perfect, but at the same time, we don't want to see something like this happen again. I think we have taken the necessary steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. I know that we have had an amazing success rate over in our Metropolitan Court, for example, on DWI cases in the last 15 months. I'm really proud of that. And I think we're going to continue to. And I think when someone misses court, there's a heightened sense of a heightened alert now about all of that, I'm sure, between our agency and APD's agency. I think we all know how important it is that we keep track of that. And we're doing much more detail on that. APD is, and we're literally telling them in real time the same days that, hey, your officer didn't show for this. Just letting you know.
Okay. Since this scandal broke, you know, we know APD Chief Harold Medina held a few press conferences and addressed a lot of questions. He discussed his view about missed court notifications. There seemed to be a little bit of back and forth between what APD was saying as far as not getting those notifications, either from the DA's office. And your office in Metro Court told us, you know, it's not your obligation to make sure that APD knows it needs to get its officers to court. But you mentioned the calendar system now. Is there any sort of like real communication, like people calling each other on the phones, or is it still mostly relying on computer systems operating as they should with the calendar and things like that?
Well, I think it's clear from, listen, after this start taking place, we reviewed all of our systems in our office to make sure we knew exactly what was happening. One of the things we did find is our prosecutors did make phone calls to police officers, to supervisory personnel, and saying, hey, you got court coming up, don't forget. And by the way, you weren't there at court today. We want to know what's up. That communication was already happening, phone calls. But as far as actual systems in place that, like I mentioned the one just a few minutes ago about the computer system in which FTAs, failure to appear notices, were literally sent, put into a system that was supposed to automatically send them over to APD. That broke down sometime before I even got into office. And what we don't know, we can't fix. And so we didn't know they weren't getting those notices. I'm frustrated with the back and forth. I don't think that's productive in any way. The absolute real culprit of this problem, if in fact the allegations are true, is anybody willing to sell the badge? And that makes me sick to my stomach, just the idea of it. And that is a real problem. And that's the real problem here. That's the biggest problem. Because I can tell you FTAs went from, I looked at the numbers, in 2018 from over 400 down to 35 last year. That's a big difference. It's been getting better. And to have this come up, it was I think, a shock to our, certainly our entire office.
I want to get to a little bit to the fallout from this. You know, one of the elements here is going to be the advocates, the victims in these court cases. They're advocates and victims' families who have said this whole thing is a slap in the face, not just because of what is alleged to have happened, but you know, they also say it's because so many drunk drivers will likely get a free pass. We know because their case has been dropped because the officers involved no longer have key credibility. What is your message to people who feel personally impacted by drunk driving in New Mexico with this scandal in mind?
My message is I completely, wholeheartedly agree with their frustration and their anger about all this. I feel the same way. I absolutely feel the same way. And drunk driving and the damage it does to this community and the horrific damage it does to specific people, including taking people's lives and the families that are left behind, I get it. I understand why they're furious to even hear that something like this took place. At the same time, I want them to also understand that numbers are just numbers, but do understand that we've convicted 1,300 people in the last year, in the last 15 months, if you will, 1,300 people for DWI. Our conviction rate and the numbers are as high as they've ever been in the history of our office. We can't find numbers that are as high as they are right now, what we've done. And I can assure everybody in the community that our office will continue to prosecute to the full extent of the law DWIs to the best of our absolute ability. And that's very, very important to us. And I understand the concern and the frustration and the anger, especially if you or your family or your friends have been victims of DWI. It is a terrible crime. It is a senseless crime. It doesn't need to happen. But at the end of the day, the DA's office knows that. And I think law enforcement overall knows that too. We have some people who apparently, allegedly have made some awful decisions. And I'm sure they'll be held accountable for those. In the meantime, I want people to have faith that we're going to continue to prosecute DWI every single day down at the DA's office.
You know, another element fallout of this, I think, is what's up with the cases that have already been adjudicated. You know, we mentioned that you've had to drop now more than 200 pending cases related to these officers whose credibility is now in question. Is your office also having to go back through convictions in deciding something different to do with those depending on the officer's testimony if it involved one of these key officers? Or do you feel like those cases were fairly adjudicated?
Any case that someone has been adjudicated guilty, that determination of guilt, whether or not they pled or were convicted, prior to the time that the U.S. Attorney's Office informed us of Giglio issues, we are not reversing those cases. If someone stood up in court and said, yeah, I was drunk, I did that. Giglio only kicks in, by the way, and this is getting down in the weeds, but Giglio kicks in when there's a trial. It does not kick in for previous that. But nonetheless, we do have some defense counsel, including some cases at the public defender's office, and they are asking the court to undo certain convictions. We are not agreeing to that. We're having specific hearings on each and every one of those because we're just not going to say just because those officers were involved 4 years ago in a case doesn't mean that all of a sudden that case, when you stood up in a courtroom and pled guilty to it, that all of a sudden that's going to nullify that. To the contrary, and all that took place long before any notice for the DA's office that they had credibility or trustworthy issues. So the short answer is no, we are not we will look at any case anybody brings to our attention that they believe we should know about. We always do that. But we're not going to turn around and vacate convictions that are already in place.
And we won't know the full scope of the federal investigation since it's ongoing as we're having this discussion. But, you know, we have been told by the FBI that when it is complete, the public will hear about results. I think something like this, though, as we've all acknowledged, it impacts public trust in the system, right? How do you see things moving forward from here and ensure the public can trust prosecutors, judges, attorneys, and officers because they're all supposed to work together in a fair criminal justice system, right?
Well, and I know I hear that. I hear that from people in the community. I'm out and about a lot, and I want to hear what people are thinking. And I will tell you that people do. It does hurt public trust in our criminal justice system when you have these kind of allegations circling around our community. It has a big effect. And as police officers, as prosecutors, I think I can speak for both of those entities. It is extremely important that every single day we continue to earn the trust of the community. And that's something we work at. Police officers are out in the neighborhood every day. And yeah, unfortunately, I mean, it's not great for morale, for APD, for all the great cops that are out there to hear about these allegations and then be looked upon a little differently from the community they're serving. That's not great. But I think we have so many good people in law enforcement in our community. I think we have so many people who care about the integrity of our system and want to make sure it works, that we will rebound from this. We will get to a better place than having to discuss on a daily basis this DWI police officer scandal. We will get to where we can get back and continue to focus on the jobs that we all do, which means catching drunk drivers, prosecuting them to the full extent of the law, and holding people accountable. That's what we're doing, and we're going to continue to do that. This is a big, unfortunate disaster that took place, but we're going to get through it because I can tell you my office is committed as much as ever to prosecute DWI to the full extent of the law.
And again, we want to be clear, no one's been criminally charged yet. The investigation's ongoing. We also don't know how far this alleged scheme could have gone yet. How's the vibe in the courtroom these days? Are prosecutors and judges on edge, you think, at all with this federal investigation going on in the background?
I don't know that on edge is the right word, but it's certainly, I think it's concerning to all of them. And I think it is something that's out there, if you will, in the corner of every courtroom is the fact that this is going on. And if you have a DWI case, you may hear questions of an officer on the stand from a defense counsel that you wouldn't have heard before. That may be going on. I think the judges are having to see some motions on just the topic that we just talked about, some older cases that may have involved some of these officers that people are trying to vacate convictions. They're making motions to do so. So that's a motion that doesn't happen very often based on the fact of it's police officers' credibility at issue. So listen, we're still dealing with it. We will deal with it for a long time, but it's not such a distraction in any way that we can't continue to do our job, which is prosecute DWIs and convict people of them.
Is there anything else you want the public to better understand about either what your office is dealing with, or is there anything else you'd like to address about this situation?
I think I'll say two things. One is that despite the allegations of dirty cops, the allegations that there are dirty cops out there, I want the public to know that the vast majority of police officers are incredible human beings that do such a great service for our community. They have the single hardest job there is, I think, in this country, is to be a police officer, de-escalate, lay your life on the line when necessary, do all the things they do, be overworked because they're understaffed. We all know that. That's one thing I want to make sure that people understand, that the vast majority of police officers are just tremendous human beings, men and women police officers. I also want to say about my office, I have some amazing prosecutors, some of them career, some of them there for a shorter time frame so far, but they are committed to making a difference. And on the issue of DWI, they are committed every single day. We convict people every single week, multiple people of DWI. We will continue to do it. We convicted 1,300 the last 15 months. I'm very proud of the office and they care. And I want the community to know when I talk about police officers and prosecutors that we may have taken a hit to the gut as I said at one point. It makes your stomach sick, but we're still going to continue to do great things for this community and keep this place safe.
DA Bregman, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Bernalillo County District Attorney Sam Bregman for giving us a lot more insight into the nature of how he sees this investigation and the elements that led up to it. Obviously, the federal investigation continues, as we mentioned multiple times. Nobody has actually been charged yet. There's a lot more to determine, and it's hard to believe that this has only been out there for just about 3 months at this point. Very hard to believe because there have been so many developments that have happened in that time.
Yeah, January 18th was the day that this news broke in Albuquerque. So definitely a lot of elements and layers unfolding. We'll continue to bring you coverage of any updates online at krqe.com and on the podcast. Feel free to follow us, subscribe to the podcast. We also appreciate our listeners and sharing the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it. Quick shout out to Working Mom 100, whose review I noticed. She says, "I'm a podcast aficionado, and this one is really great. Proud that our little state has a pod of this quality and engagement." Very kind of you, Working Mom 100. We appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind words. And also, I would encourage anyone who's listening on Spotify, every episode, you can write your feedback directly into the Spotify app. Usually the default question is there is, what did you think of this episode? We'd love to hear more from you directly, whether it's your ideas or your feedback as well on what you thought of what we just produced for the last week. So thank you.
Feel free to always reach out to your hosts. That's Chris and me, either via email. I'm gabrielle.burkhardt@krqe.com or gburknm on social media.
I'm also at chrismckeetv and chris.mckee@krqe.com. Thanks for listening.